Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Ellich, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. This is the election special, Skylines. We are, as we record this, it's Thursday. We're 7 days from Britain going to the polls. Although I learnt from Stephen Bush in this morning's meeting that a quarter of the votes have already been cast via postal ballot. So maybe the results are already clear. We don't know.
Well, I mean, sorry, I should introduce myself.
Wait to be introduced, Patrick.
Sorry.
Patrick McGuire's here to tell me about what's going on in the
blundering in, the yeah. As in work, as in my personal life, blundering in where I'm. Anyway, so you raise an interesting point about postal votes, John. I don't know if anybody saw, don't know why I'm addressing your audience as if they're going to speak back to me, but Michael Crick did a video with Dominic Raab earlier this week in Esher and Walton, and he said, Dominic, who is at risk of losing that leafy Surrey commuter belt seat to Lib Dems, he said, are you worried? And he said, look at the postal votes, Michael, which is actually an offence punishable by up to a 6-month prison sentence or a £5,000 fine. Parties are allowed to go to the opening of postal votes, but they're not allowed to look at them or indicate what the result might be as a result of that, because it's a criminal offence.
I am shocked that a man of the high calibre of Dominic Raab, who I've taken describing as a haunted Crichton costume, just in the hope that catches on as a meme, I'm shocked that he would be saying anything ill-advised or foolish or really anything bad. I mean,
well,
he's a giant among us, really.
In fairness to Dominic Raab, at this stage in the campaign, you do tend to get parties definitely not telling journalists or panicking among themselves what the postal votes they're not meant to have seen tell them about what might be happening. And also, it's fair to say that Tory voters are more likely to vote by post, so even if parties did look at postal votes, which, you know, they all abide by the law and definitely don't do that, no one's ever done that, it would give you a skew picture anyway. But Stephen was right in our meeting to point out that the election has been happening for some time, and in some constituencies, swing constituencies, a lot of stuff's already happened.
Okay, so this is interesting. I thought it would be a good idea to get Patrick in, because you've been travelling up and down the country to all sorts of exciting seats.
Over land and sea.
Yeah, you've been to Northern Ireland. We do a lot of good work in Northern Ireland these days, between you and Alvar Ray, our other political correspondent, which is nice because, you know, a lot of the British media have largely forgotten that Northern Ireland exists and is part of the UK.
And now we remember it too much, frankly.
Well, maybe we'll cut that bit, we'll see, depending on how much trouble we want you to get you into. But yeah, I just thought it was a good opportunity to kind of ask about some of the regional patterns you've been spotting in vote share and attitudes. So I'm gonna give you the nonsense I've picked up via Twitter, and then you can tell me.
I can
exactly
debunk it or can verify it.
So my impression is that London maybe is sort of on the path to 2017,
and
that it was quite fragmented, but the closer we get, the more people who are vaguely sort of left liberal are thinking, oh God, they don't want a massive Tory majority, and so are holding their nose and swinging behind Labour.
I think that's certainly true. Where there are key differences, there was a London poll that the Evening Standard had early this week that had Labour back up to 48% in the capital.
That's still behind their 2017
thing. Behind their 2017 thing, which is where the book comes in. What Labour almost did in 2017 was win Chipping Barnet. They nearly won Finchley Golders Green. They nearly won Hendon.
These are the seats with big Jewish communities.
Yes.
Kind of the through line here.
Whereas some people are confident, and indeed the YouGov MLP had Labour nearly winning Chipping Barnet, which Teresa Villa's seat, only a 351 majority. But in the other seats, I think it's fair to say that Labour are not going to repeat their 2017 although the left is pouring time and energy into Hendon, so you know, let's see what happens.
And in last year's local elections, it's worth saying that the London Borough of Barnet is an outer London borough that kind of bucked the trend towards Labour in London.
Yeah, I mean, in any other
probably
year,
because it's the most 100%. The heaviest concentration of Jewish voters in Britain.
In any other year, with any other Labour party, with any other Labour leader, they would have won that council at a canter. So obviously, that's the one of the big what ifs in London. There's also a live question as to whether the Lib Dems can hold on to seats like Tom Brakes, Carl Shulton and Sutton, because they're, you know, Sutton was a borough that voted to leave. So it's an interesting question there. But broadly, I would be surprised if we had a result that was significantly different to 2017. Obviously, what seats might flip? Kensington City, London, Westminster. Let's see who the best Remain candidate there is, but we'll see.
Well, just before we move on from London, I've noticed people keep referring to the cities of London and Westminster as two cities, which I've not spotted before. Is that kind of a new thing people are doing, or has it always been referred to that way?
I think it's been a fairly well-established shorthand, mainly because it's so chewy to say cities of London and Westminster.
Also, it's weirdly pleasingly American, I think. It's which, you know, everyone in British politics is obsessed with the West Wing.
Where is it? Twin cities? Minnesota? That's Minnesota,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
That's what it's reminding me. It's Minneapolis and St. Paul. Anyway, moving on from London. So in the South more broadly, that was where we were probably, if we were going to see a kind of big swing to the Lib Dems in Tory seats from, you know, Tory Remainers who are perhaps worried about Britain's membership of the single market, they're perhaps worrying about the economy in a way that hard Brexit is not a good policy for them. That's where we'd expect to see the Lib Dems posing a threat to the Tories. The vibe I'm getting is that for all the talk of that at the start of the campaign, there's probably not as much of that as was discussed. Is that right?
That is completely fair to say. In a lot of these seats, the Lib Dem increase in the vote is not to be sniffed at. But there are several things to consider. The first is that in a lot of these seats, Labour's 2017 vote share was massively increased, mainly on the back of Remainers. So they have Lib Dems have a battle in squeezing that down completely. The second is, and the most significant thing that we've all forgotten, is that there is a very important word in this phrase, Tory Remainers. And
yes,
for most voters, it seems, every pollster will tell you this, that there is a hard core of Tory Remain support that just won't budge. It's around 20%. They won't even think about voting for another party. We forget that actually not everybody is Michael Heseltine or Stephen Dorrell or Chris Patten. Their attachment is to the party more, or their aversion to the Labour Party. Mm. Their attachment to Remain isn't strong enough to overcome that. So, you know, Tory Remainers are still Tories. Let's not forget, they haven't been dislocated from their political allegiance completely, and when push comes to shove, it's Brexit or Corbyn. A lot of them are picking Brexit.
Well, this to my mind was the story of 2017, right? It's for all the talk of like collapsing party allegiances, which is a real phenomenon, which has been very big in British politics over literally decades. I get the impression there's a lot of people out there who are politically motivated, not so much by loyalty to one team, but by their aversion to the other.
Yeah, and this is the defining thing of first past the post. Our elections in this country are, do you want a Tory government, yes or no, vote accordingly? Or do you not want a Labour government, yes or no, vote accordingly? And interesting, this what motivates Labour members, Tim Bale and several other academics from Queen Mary University, great man, I'm sure he's a friend of this podcast, released a very good book called Foot Soldiers, which is the first proper academic study of party members. And basically, what motivates Labour Party people to join the Labour Party is because they hate the Tories, not because it's not necessarily a positive gesture. Yeah, so you're right to say that this is an election about what do you dislike most. For Tory Remainers, that's the question. And now Boris Johnson is proposing not a no deal. You know, he's got a deal. You know, it's an orderly Brexit for now. Let's not get into what happens in the cliff edge in 2020. It's no longer quite as horrifying a proposition as it was when a Tory, you know, majority isn't as horrifying a proposition to those voters as it was when the Lib Dems went revoke. It's not a reasonable position, but it seems like one.
So, yeah, it does feel a little bit like we are seeing a lot of people who are, like, broadly anti-Tory or anti-Labour flowing back to their natural party.
Yeah.
But perhaps more on one side than the other, which is why we're now going to move on to talk about the Midlands and the North. So the Tory strategy has been very much based on the idea that they can peel off enough sort of culturally Brexity votes in a lot of traditionally Labour seats. So people with like traditional conservative social values, probably not rich necessarily, but comfortable sort of homeowning middle-aged people. And they are more concerned about combination of being like, you know, pretty Brexity, but also concerned about what a radical Labour economic policy would do to them. And the Tories are kind of hoping to peel off enough of those guys to kind of get a few dozen seats over the line. It feels like maybe that's not been a completely crazy plan? What's it feel like on the ground?
Bad for the Labour Party is what I would say. Even the people who have been sent by the Labour Party after that YouGov MRP to proselytise and, you know, win back these Labour heartlands privately are really pessimistic. But obviously, this is a longer, listeners to the podcast will know and love urbanism and cities and demographics or whatever. It's important not to get het up on the idea that this is all about 2016. Obviously, that has catalysed it. But in a lot of these seats, the nature of the purpose of the settlements has changed, right? Your Bolsovers, your Ashfields to a certain extent. As the pits have disappeared, the nature of the economic nature of these places and the sort of people who live there has slowly over generations changed.
Well, there's an internal brain drain, right? Like basically if you grow up in Bolsover and do well at school, go to university, the odds are you don't go back because that's not where the graduate level jobs are.
And also what replaces them, okay, where, in a lot of cases, warehouses and distribution centres where Eastern European people work, but also call centres, office complexes, you know, so the shift is away from heavy unionised labour to lower-end white-collar jobs. And, you know, they become sort of more conventional commutery places, which is the striking thing. Matthew Parris wrote this about Bolsover in 2017 as a former Derbyshire MP. He was like, OK, yes, this is... It'd be a huge moment and Brexit will help catalyse it and a version to Corn will help catalyse this transition, but it's already happening. You know, Bolsover is becoming a dormitory town for, you know, Derby or Nottingham, a dormitory area. There's no town called Bolsover.
Yeah, no, it's as the long-term listeners will know, in 2016, I also have covered the Trump election in the US. And what really struck me about that was how those Rust Belt towns in places like Ohio look a lot like the north of England. It's places where, like, old industries have gone. Nothing has kind of appeared to replace them necessarily. And there has been this internal brain drain. So the demographic profile is different. They're now older, they're whiter. They tend to sort of lose young, educated people. And those are the places that in Britain have historically voted Labour, but voted for Brexit. And in the US have historically voted Democratic, but were starting to drift into the Republican column. Mm. And that the fact this is happening on both sides of the Atlantic suggests this is not a Brexit-specific phenomenon. It's about broader economic forces.
Yes, exactly.
So my big question is, like, can you distinguish between different regions of the Midlands and the North? Because again, this is one of those things where I don't know if this is just nonsense, but I have been getting the impression that maybe the West Midlands is looking more fruitful for the Tories, parts of the North East perhaps, maybe not so much the North West. Is there any truth to that, or is this nonsense?
I think you're broadly correct. So several things to pick up there. The West Midlands has always been slightly more fertile ground for the Tories. Enoch Powell, for instance, was the MP for Wolverhampton South West. You know, and those seats in the Black Country and in Birmingham have always been more... Not that Birmingham is going to flip blue this time, but the West Midlands Black Country area has always been more susceptible to Toryism.
It's a very different economic history. Like, we do tend to bundle them up together, and it's often forgotten that as late as the early 1980s, the Midlands was as rich as London.
Yeah.
Whereas the North wasn't. The North's economic crisis starts before the war, whereas the Midlands is doing quite well until really the Big Bang.
Yeah. And the East, and then you have the East Midlands, your Bassett Laws, your Bolsovers, your Ashfields, your Mansfields, your North East Derbyshires, the latter two of which have already gone Tory and are staying Tory, if YouGov is anything to go by. Things look bad for Labour there. You know, those are your coalfield towns that, but crucially, have also been trending Tory over the past two or three elections. Then you have the North East, your Bishop Auckland's, etc. Again, places that have been trending Tory. And also, as somebody pointed out on Twitter yesterday, it's easy to forget that despite the tales of ancestral woe and hatred of the Tories, some of these places were getting 30-40% of the vote for the Tories in the Thatcher era. Mm. And Ashfield and Workington, to pick two of the most evocative examples at this election at random, both elected Tory MPs in the 1970s at by-elections. So it's not accurate to say that it is, you know, a once-in-a-generation heresy for these places to elect Tory MPs. I don't know how long a generation is. It's not unthinkable in these places. In the northwest, beyond the conventional marginals, your Bury South, your Bury North.
Bury North is another quite Jewish seat, isn't it?
Bury South.
Bury South.
Because that's sort of got Prestwich. And, you know, Labour have now privately said that's not happening after Ivan Lewis endorsed the Tories. Their hope was Ivan Lewis would pick up votes from disenchanted Labour voters over anti-Semitism. Ivan Lewis, the former Labour MP, who accused of sexual harassment, then quit the Labour Party, citing, you know, the delay in this case and his handling of anti-Semitism, has now endorsed the Tories.
It is one of those stories with where no one comes out well on that one, do they?
No, yeah. Nobody
there,
at
no,
all.
There are no heroes there.
But beyond the conventional marginals, Blackpool seats as well, Blackpool South and Blackpool North indeed, there is no real... There doesn't seem to be any significant chances of stuff falling. And the really striking thing in the northwest, actually, is two conventional historical marginals out of thin air, Lancaster and Fleetwood and Sefton Central, which was once Crosby. Both of those were what you would call just ordinary Labour Tory marginals. The striking thing about, no matter how badly Labour are doing, is that they're going to hold on to both those seats quite handily, which tells you something about how
that
voting patterns...
You know, why do you think that is?
It's a really good question. I don't know. I think it's demographic change. Crosby has always been quite a wealthy seat. Mm. Sorry, Sefton Central. But as I think I've spoken about on this podcast before, there is a process of scousification in the...
People moving out of Liverpool.
People moving out of Liverpool and they continue to vote as if they're in Liverpool. I don't think Labour are going to win Southport, sadly, for those of us that grew up in Southport yearning for a Labour MP. I think the Tories are going to increase their majority there, as the Lib Dems are...
It's all right for you. I grew up in Romford. Like, you know, it's like... On Havering Council, the Tories are the left-wing option.
And then you have places like Lancaster, you know, lots of graduates, fairly pleasant place. So, again, and that speaks to the sort of the broader, the bigger global trend, which is the defining divide being education rather than socioeconomic class.
Yeah, the shift of commuters is kind of, are people being pushed out of the cities or in the case of Merseyside, I imagine it's more a choice they're making rather than a thing about housing costs and the way it is in London. But that is now having an impact here as well, where there are outer London seats that have trended redder, such as Ian Duncan Smith's Chingford and Woodford Green, because people are being priced out of Hackney and Walthamstow. But they're not sort of shifting values when they move out.
And that's the interesting thing about places like Evesham Walton,
Dominic Robb's
Surrey commuter belt seat. The sort of flavour of those constituencies is changing from golf clubs and jacks to yoga mats and chai lattes.
Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So we've mostly been talking about England. It's important to remember there are other countries in the United Kingdom.
Other constituencies. Yeah.
Let's have a brief chat about Wales. So the vibe I get with Wales is that the Tories were sort of hoping to do their sort of Northern Midlands trick there as well, but maybe that's not coming off so well, and Labour is actually doing much better than it looked like at the start of the campaign.
What's really winding me up about Wales is this idea that, again, it's the lazy reporting of, oh God, the horny-handed sons of... It's horny-handed, right? Horny-handed sons of toil.
I mean, I hope so, because otherwise God knows what you're talking about.
You know, the horny-handed sons of toil, it's a patronising phrase about sort of working men.
Among other things,
the horny-handed
that is a thing it can mean. That is a thing the words horny-handed can mean. So, yeah,
the horny-handed
let's stick with that.
The horny-handed sons of toil in Bolsover and Bishop Auckland and Clwyd South and Anglesey could never dream of voting for the Conservative Party. It's going to be a massive wrench and it's going to be a massive realigning election. The thing that annoys me about North Wales, and indeed Wales in general, if you look at the 1983 map, the Tories won loads of seats in Wales. They won 14 seats in Wales. It's not unthinkable that the Tories could win in Wales. That's separate to your question of, are they going to sweep all before them in Wales? Probably not. Might they win those marginals in North Wales, your Allen Deeside, your Dellins, your Vale of Clwyd, your Clwyd South? Quite possibly. They're all very tight. George Grills, our Tony Howard scholar, feels weird to be saying that about somebody else, but I am quite old now, has been on the road in Wales, and he gloomy prognosis from him. But in terms of sort of beyond marginal seats that they have won before, say, for instance, in 83 and 92, I'd say the answer is probably not. Roger Awan Scully from the Wales Government Centre will tell you the same, I think.
Yeah, so just two comments about that, one relevant, one not. The non-relevant one, which I'm sticking as a footnote, is on the most recent edition of the main New Statesman Politics podcast, which was a live recording at the Cambridge Literary Festival. Stephen Bush talks at some length about starting to feel old, which I always thought when that moment came, it would make me feel good about my age. It's like, see, it's happening to you too.
But it just made you feel even older.
Yeah, it turns out he's still 10 years younger than me. So
Stephen is 10 years old.
He is. Wow. I mean, like, he's not been blessed with my genes. But
you've
he
got
is,
a lot of
in
hair.
Fact, 10
jealous.
Years. As you noticed on my Instagram, which you should all follow, by the way, I posted pictures of me at the beginning and end of the decade, specifically because I've not noticeably aged.
But you haven't.
I know, which is, this isn't going to last long. At some point, my face is just going to melt. But I'm clinging to this while I can. Anyway, moving on from that, it kind of feels with the whole, you know, Wales could never vote for the Tories, in the same way that, like, you know, Scotland often likes to think of itself as a left-wing country, it's because the Tories have kind of positioned themselves slightly as an English nationalist party, right? It's so, you know, being anti-Tory has become a sort of Welsh or Scottish identity,
and look,
it's a form of Englishness.
Yeah, and it suits the bigger parties of anti-Toryism in those countries. For instance, Welsh Labour. No, we reflectively say Welsh Labour. That's the successor of Roderick Morgan's clear red water strategy for you there. And the SNP, and before them Scottish Labour, to present Scotland or Wales as a naturally anti-Tory place, when that just isn't actually true. Look at, say, Lembit Opik losing his seat in Montgomeryshire in 2010. Right. Often, the sad truth is, for, you know, those of us who believe in Welsh exceptionalism, and indeed Scottish exceptionalism, is that actually even the national questions don't insulate them from voting as other places do broadly?
Well, they still contain people in their 50s who own their own homes and are frightened of a Labour government and like to drive cars everywhere. You know, all that stuff. There's still all the forces of Toryism except for the English. Plus, there's English people who move to these places. Let's do Scotland very briefly. Scotland sort of feels to me like maybe the Tories are doing, again, better than they perhaps feared at the start of the campaign. They might hold on to a fair few of their, was it 13 seats they've got out there?
Yeah, Tories have been broadly fine. I can't see them having that terrible a night for two reasons. One, Nicola Sturgeon has made this election into an election as much about independence as it is about Brexit, which suits the Tories. And also, you forget that actually 40% of Scotland, or 38% before angry people write in, voted to leave.
Yeah.
So if you can unite the Leave vote behind you in those constituencies, then stickety-boo.
But Labour's going to be nowhere in Scotland, right? I was actually surprised when I looked it up and realised that they won seven seats there in 2017.
They won seven seats.
I thought they were still on two or three.
All of them incredibly marginal, apart from Ian Murray, Edinburgh South constituency, who will be broadly fine.
He's pretty safe. He's the one who hung on in 2015.
Yeah, he's the one who hung, you know, which has as much to do with his enthusiasm for Hearts Football Club as it does about his... Well, actually, no, that is one of his qualities as a politician, that he loves Heart of Midlothian. Then the next one after that is Midlothian, which is Martin Whitfield's seat, which he has a 2,000 majority, and the rest of them are in the low thousands and hundreds. YouGov had them keeping two, and in a couple of others, they are a couple of percentage points behind the SNP. But a common complaint you hear from, you know, voters, it's not as simple as squeeze the anti-independence vote, because a lot of, in some of these seats, there is a pro-Indy Labour vote, especially in the Central Belt seats. You know, so it's not as simple as saying, 20% Tory vote there, do everything you can to squeeze it, because in the process of squeezing that, it might become more difficult to hold on to what you already have.
I'm not going to do Northern Ireland because it's too complicated.
I'll get down the rabbit hole as well.
And we should be drawing this to a close gradually. But I just want to very briefly ask about policy. Is anyone talking about policy? Is it coming up at all? Is like on the doorstep, are people worrying about the housing crisis or buses or whatever it may be?
The common gripe you hear, to illustrate this with a vignette from my own hometown, I went to Southport to interview the candidates the other week, and I said, what are the big issues here? And each one of them said in turn, Lord Street, which is our mile-long Victorian boulevard when Louis-Napoleon Bonaparte, later to become Napoleon III, was exiled to England for a period. He lodged on Lord Street, came back and
Napoleon
told...
Napoleon III lived in Southport?
Yeah. And then,
I did not know
then
that.
Then told Baron Houseman that he wanted tree-lined boulevards with broad colonnades, just like you see in Southport, and that is a fact.
That's amazing. I knew that Birkenhead Park on the Wirral was the model for Central Park in New York. I didn't realise the extent to which the Liverpool City region had shaped the urban world.
I call Southport the Paris of the North, as many other people do, but actually...
Do they, though?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. But do any of them not live in Southport?
Well, I don't live in Southport anymore. But just to return to your question, all three of them said Lord Street, which, you know, lots of empty units, etc., etc. Local issues are really what are animating people. I found the campaign trail. You know, you say, what are you annoyed at here? No decent jobs, infrastructure's crap, A&E has been downgraded. All everyone is talking about is policy. I guess the problem is, it's overlaying on a national picture.
I am finding it interesting. The Tories are clearly feeling the need to talk about transport in a way that's not been big for them. So they've offered £500 million to reverse the Beeching Acts, which is, you know, bugger all. But it's clearly like, it sounds like a big sum of money. And old people who remember steam trains will be like, oh, that's nice.
The beaching thing is a really significant thing, because even if you... So, for instance, to return to Southport again, there's two stretches of line called the Bursker Curves, which linked South... There is a town in West Lancashire called Bursker, and there are two curves, one of which has been sort of filled in, or the track has been lifted, which enabled sort of direct trains from Southport to Ormskirk, also in West Lancashire, and Southport to Preston. And everybody, even me, I'm 24 years old, Dr. Beeching was dead before I was born, I think. You know what I mean? Like, you'd come to learn about this because there is a town 10 miles up the road or 15 miles up the road that you can't get to by train because it was closed, or you drive to work, or you cycle to work along a cycle path that used to be a rail, used to be a railway line, which itself, you know, speaks to the complexity of opening Beeching lines. But the scars of
it resonates,
right? And you know, but this is why I think Get Brexit Done is such a seductive pitch, because like,
then we can move on to other
then things. We can move on to this thing you're really angry about. Everybody knows that Parliament isn't. They broadly say they can't do anything, you know, which is why I'm the guy who makes that stop. And, you know, I will reopen the Bursker Curves.
OK. I mean, I also think it's interesting, the Tories have, as we record this, they came out yesterday with a £4.2 billion fund for the big English cities outside London to kind of invest in transport. Now, again, that's not a ridiculously small sum of money. It's only when you split it eight ways, it's like, yeah, this won't do very much. But the fact that they are talking about this does feel like a shift from really where the Tories have been for decades.
Yeah, and also, like, it is central government accepting responsibility, right? It's not Osborneism, it's not devolution, it's not, I will give this to Andy Burnham or Steve Rotherham or Dan Jarvis. Yeah. Like,
also,
it's
that,
your problem now, mate.
Yeah, that money is also on will be available to West Yorkshire, which is the one major urban area that hasn't gone down the mayoral route.
We might finally see the Leeds Supertram.
Yeah.
Which is another thing, right? Like, if you live in Leeds, you're aware that for 30 years...
It's been constantly promised and never arrived.
You've wanted a Supertram, in which time, you know, cities in Poland and China have built thousands of metro... Well, not thousands, but dozens of metro lines, and all for lack of, you know, municipal and central government will.
Yeah, biggest urban area in Europe without some kind of metro network that says Leeds, Bradford, West Yorkshire conurbation.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, I should very briefly ask, is anyone talking about housing?
Yeah. Whether it's necessarily housing for its own sake and just, I can't afford a house, or... Because in a lot of places, I don't know what you think about this, but the government is slowly building more bloody houses. Private new builds are popping up in places.
Yeah, it's up. It's
and
not,
the interesting thing,
not necessarily in the right places.
Yeah, no, well, that's the thing, yeah. Right? So in Ashfield, bizarrely, one of the big talking points of this election, Jason Zdrosny, the independent leader of Ashfield Council, one of his big selling points is, I stopped a development of 1,800 houses.
Oh, God.
Sort of partly out of NIMBYism. In a lot of places, there is plenty of housing. As you say, it's not necessarily in the right places.
Yeah. We should definitely be wrapping up, so I'm gonna put you on the spot and say, Patrick, what's going to happen when the exit poll comes out?
What's going to happen when the exit poll goes out? Well, a hush will fall over Sushi Samba, where we're having our...
The New Statesman's election party is happening.
Party. Yeah. What's going to happen when the exit poll drops? I think David... No, Hugh Edwards. God, that's going to be weird. Hugh Edwards will say, and it's the Conservatives who are the largest party. I'm not going to be drawn on what happens after that.
Okay. I think they're going to get a majority.
I think if they do get a majority, it'll be quite it'll either be quite small or very big.
I reckon...
I don't think we'll see a majority like the YouGov poll suggests is 68. I think it'll either be... It'll fall either side of that.
I'm going to put my neck on the line and say I reckon Tory majority 30 to 50, worst Labour result in decades, and we're all very depressed.
Yeah, I think you're broadly correct. I think we will see a Labour result just north of what Michael Foot got in 1983, which was 209. But anything can happen in the last week of campaign. Differential turnout among young people, yada, yada, yada. Could yet be wrong. We could have another hung parliament.
Well, by the time Skylands comes back for its Christmas special...
I look like an idiot.
You will all know the results, so may God have mercy on our souls. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to Skylines, the podcast from City Metric, the New Statesman City site. It was presented and recorded by me, John Alledge, and produced by Nick Hilton. You can find Skylines every 2 weeks on iTunes, Acast, or whatever other app you use to get your podcast. And while you're there, why not leave us a nice review to tell other people we're here? It really helps people discover the show, and I'm a megalomaniac, so the more people I can get listening to this, the better, really. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.